This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Nicholas Bergqvist. How are you, Nicholas?
I'm fine, Chris.
Excellent, excellent. You're from Sweden.
Yes.
You're my second Swedish person I've ever had on the podcast. We had another lady from the Swedish Monopoly on a wee while ago. But you're not from the Monopoly.
I'm not from the Monopoly, no.
What do you do, Nicholas?
I work as a sommelier and as a wine educator. Perhaps a little bit of a different kind of sommelier position. I'm working in a wine collector's club.
Yep.
So what we basically have is a big cellar in central Stockholm that was opened 32 years ago. And the idea that my boss had was to make a space for people that live in apartments to be able to store wine under perfect conditions. Mm-hmm. But he didn't want it to be only about storing wine. He wanted it to be a place for people to meet and to taste wine and talk about wine. And at this point, back in 1986, people in Sweden really didn't drink wine. And there were a lot of people that were really trying to get Swedish people to get interested in that. And so what we do there is we, of course, store our members' wines. But we also, if they want to come and open a bottle, then we have a club room for them where they can do it. And we help them to prepare the wine and decant and everything. And we are around to ask if they have any questions to ask, then we will give them the details on the wines and so on, or set up tastings for them. And if they want to have a little bit of a dinner or something like that, then we will help them with that part.
I went to Hong Kong a few years ago and met up with the guys at Crown Cellars. And I think they've got a very similar model insofar as they have a cellar there for people in Hong Kong who live in apartments, and it's very hard to dig a cellar in an apartment when you're 10 flights up and your neighbor below starts complaining. And they also have a restaurant there and a similar type of setup. But I've noticed, particularly in the last 10, 20 years, there's been a lot of these sort of cellars / clubs setting up. There's some in Auckland, New Zealand, and all over the place. And it seems to be quite a trend, particularly when people are living more in apartments. Is Sweden, a lot of people in Sweden live in apartments? Or
To some point, I would say yes. Stockholm is still a very small city. It's not, if you live in the suburbs, you're still pretty close to central Stockholm. But I think a lot of people at a certain time in their lives, they have a tendency to move just outside of town and perhaps have a big house where it's possible for you to build up your wine collection. Mm. But then the kids move out and perhaps you decide that it's a good thing to move back into the city, and then you sit there with a couple of hundred of wine bottles that you don't have any space for anymore.
So it's a heck of a weekend though, isn't it? Again, through it all. I'm moving. I've got 400 bottles to get through tonight. Okay, so do you see your clientele as more older, 50 plus?
Yeah, of course, it is a bit like that, and part of it because we are an old club. We have been around since 1986, and we still have a pretty big, still quite a lot of members that joined us a very long time ago, and they still have their wines, and they still have the need for having them with us. And perhaps, as it is right now, people tend to be a little bit more interested in wines that are more for immediate consumption than for laying down. But I still think that we have a lot of people that are becoming more interested in it, even if it's the actual storing, aging wine kind of thing. I think that's something that probably hit people more when they get into the 40s and something like that. And of course, you need to have a good job and an income before you start to really laying down bottles for the future.
So it takes a while necessarily.
Yeah. So, the majority of our new and young members, they would be in their 40s rather than younger than that. But we also see that there is a much bigger interest in wine with the new generations. And we actually have quite a lot of members that were born in the early 90s, but perhaps not mainly interested in laying down wine, but they come to us to be able to go to our tastings and the kind of wine education that we offer also. So definitely an important part of our what we do as well.
Okay. I went to a presentation yesterday, and it was about a lady who used to own a winery in Napa. They sold it, and now they're setting up another winery there. But one of the things they found was they were talking about cult wines And she said that there's a change in the market in California from, they call it direct to consumer, where people would get on the mailing list, they'd buy these cult wines, and then they want to build verticals, you know, big sessions of verticals. But she seemed to think that in America, that type of person is becoming less and less and less. In fact, people are moving more to experientials, and rather than having lots of assets, they're looking to have an experience. So have you noticed a change in your business, you know, that's reflected that, or is it not quite the same in Sweden?
I think it is. I mean, I would say that our clientele are mainly people that are really interested in wine, independent on what price points they buy at. They like wine and they like aged wines. Mm. But we have a very, very big spread in terms of what styles of wine you lay down. And if we go back to the very beginning in the 80s, then of course it was mainly about the top Bordeaux Chateau. And we have a lot of that style of wine around, but also perhaps a lot of people that are now, even if they have those wines, they drink those wines, they prefer to buy different styles nowadays, since they, some of them think that they get better value from other other areas in the world. But sure. They still love their Bordeaux wines, and as long as they haven't, the prices haven't gone totally through the roof, they will still drink them and enjoy them rather than pass them on.
Yeah.
But of course, it's, some of the wines end up in auctions anyway. And I think it's, I would say that still we have a bigger interest in storing wine for aging and drinking rather than making it as an investment.
So you're saying that Bordeaux is quite popular, or was?
It would be. If you look at the, what styles of wine we do have in the cellars, Bordeaux is still the main thing. But we also see that it's what people are actually laying down right now. It's, if it's more of the classical wine regions, it's now much more about Burgundy, for example. There is, of course, still a lot of Champagne, but also a bigger interest in some areas of Italy, for example. So it's definitely Barolo is something that's growing a lot, and related styles of Nebbiolo. It's something that I think, especially for the generation that are in their 40s, that's sort of like their Bordeaux. It's the preferred wine region.
Okay. Do you see any other, you know, you've got the classic regions, as you said, Bordeaux, Burgundy, maybe the Rhone Valley. Do you see much of that?
We definitely see it, but it's still quite a small percentage of everything what's in there. But there are very interesting wines from Burgundy, from the Rhone Valley.
Yeah. What about Montalcino? Well,
I would say that's one of those reasons that I can see that there is a big interest with the people that are really interested in wine at the moment. I feel that they have been interested in Barolo for a long time, and Nebbiolo is something that's becoming, it has sort of gone to the next level in Sweden. It's not only for the really wine interested people anymore, it's a grape and related to styles of wine that most people that want to be a little bit savvy about wine, they definitely buy them, which means I think that a lot of people that used to be all about Barolo or Barbaresco, they are changing their preferences a little bit or looking at something new. And I think Brunello is something that is very interesting for them, at least when it comes to the more traditionally made styles of.
What about other countries? You know, I'm a Kiwi. I live in England, yeah, but I'm a Kiwi. What about New Zealand or Australian wines?
I would say that New Zealand and Australia is something that has been on a quite low interest point in Sweden for the last 10 years, but before that it used to be Australia was like the biggest single country that we did import wine from, even if it of course mainly was about bag-in-box wines and so on. But we have a lot of like old vintages of Penfolds, especially Grange, lying around, and that people were interested in already at a very early stage. So it's already in the late 80s and 90s that was a very important style of wine, and Australia has definitely been big before, even if it's, I think it's been a couple of tough years. And I see now that wines from both Australia and New Zealand are definitely becoming much more interesting now again, but it's still mainly in the restaurant market, the newer, fresher styles of wine that emerge from down under.
Yeah, they don't necessarily, they're not always designed to age
No, I think many of them would age beautifully. Oh, but I think it's also, I mean, it's a question from the moment that people start to take an interest in wine and drink them at a restaurant or even bring the bottles to our place and open them, because it's a very big difference what we open in the club rooms compared to what people actually lay down. It's a pretty big difference.
Oh, really?
So it's you definitely see wines from small producers in New Zealand and in Australia, and the same with Italy, for example. A lot of wine from Etna, for example. But that's not really what people are laying down, at least not for the moment. They might buy two or four bottles of a wine, but you don't really buy two or three cases because I think they want to see more for themselves how the wines, the evolution.
Do you get to try many of the wines?
We get to try all of the wines since we are the ones, we check that all the bottles are in condition.
So you open the wine?
We open the wine and we decide when to decant them and prepare them for
the client. And you will taste it to make sure it's not corked.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so that's quite good. So you get to crack into some quite nice old vintages.
And also I think a pretty important part since that's what gives us ability to give other members recommendations of what should you open now or what you perhaps should hang on to for a couple more years before you crack the bottles open.
Yeah, yeah. Although it's always difficult because, like, some people like really old wines. Like grab a granny, stuff that I would say is way too old. And they're going, this is perfect.
Of course. And that's also an advantage that we have, that it's a members club. So we meet our members very often, and it's not that hard. When you communicate with people every once in a while, then you sort of get an idea about their taste and what they want, and then we can give them recommendations based on that.
Yeah. Do you find that obviously Sweden's got a monopoly supply here? Can people get these sort of higher end wines without any problems? The monopoly says, "Yep, that's all fine. You can buy that."
The monopoly is a little bit problematic when it comes to the real top end of wines, because the allocations are generally pretty small, and they want to spread it out even on all the population in Sweden, which means that if the wine like the Giacomo Conterno Barolo or something like that is released, it might be three cases for the whole nation.
Oh, okay.
And in general, the good thing with that is that the markup of the prices that the monopoly does, it's always the same, independent on how popular a wine is, which means that the prices are often extremely good. You often get wines at half the price of what it would cost anywhere else pretty much in the world.
Yeah, yeah. But then it's getting access.
On the other hand, it might be 36 bottles, and which means that all of those wines, they are sold through the internet. So you have to log in on Thursday mornings. They release quite a lot of those styles of wine. You have to log in sometime before 10 o'clock, and then you have to be really, really fast to hit the buy button at the third of a second when you can still have the opportunity of getting your hands on one of the bottles. And you can get a maximum one or two bottles dependent on how popular the wine is, which means that for a lot of people, that's a very good way of buying. If you want a diverse cellar with a lot of different wines, that's nice. But many of our members would like at least one case of each wine, which means that you have to look outside of Sweden to be able to buy the wines instead.
Can they do that and then bring the wines into Sweden?
Yes, absolutely. So either, of course, it's a possibility. If the importer has more of the wine in Sweden, then you could easily buy it through the monopoly if you just contact the importer. But I would also say that especially people that are interested in Barolo or Burgundy or something like that, then you go down to that region once or twice every year and you go and meet the producers that you really like and you get your yearly allocation there and then you bring the wines home by yourself.
So. Oh, yeah, because you can bring anything you like in, you just can't purchase.
Yes, exactly. So it's as long as you are traveling with the wines, then the European Union laws applies. You can bring, that would be hundreds of liters of wine.
Yeah.
But as soon as you would want to buy something from within the European Union, but not go with the wines and bring them in over the border yourself, then you would have to register the purchase and pay the Swedish alcohol tax. And I think it's not really that hard to do, but it's a little bit too much of a hassle.
Is there any other type of clubs like yours in Sweden? Is it a popular way?
I would say that we are probably two or three places doing basically the same thing, but we're doing it in slightly different ways.
Okay, and if people want to resell their wines, obviously the monopoly owns it. Can you can you get members sell their wines to other members?
No, that would be illegal as well. It was actually until 2004. I think it was actually illegal to inherit wine in Sweden, since it was only the monopoly that could sell wine. So in theory, wine should be destroyed if someone should inherit it.
But, oh my goodness me!
I don't think that really happened, unless it was. I mean,
so some guy with a beautiful vertical collection of really expensive stuff. He pops his clogs.
But I don't think that I don't think that really happened. I think, I mean, if there was some kind of feud over the inheritance and all of those wines got to be, I mean, part of some legal process or something like that, then there would be a risk for that. But otherwise, I don't think it's people would just share whatever was. But in theory, it was at least illegal. But now the monopoly is running auctions since 2004. And it started out like once a year, but now it's up to it's eight times a year, and each of these auctions is for 3 days. So it's,
and these are high end wines as well, or everything.
I would say it's a pretty high end side of wine. You don't really see that much of sort of the lower ends of Bordeaux or something like that. It's generally high end wines, which is a bit sad because it isn't only the really expensive wines that age. There are a lot of wines that are 10, 15 euro that actually, if you just put them away for 5 or 6 years, they are actually very, very good wines.
I haven't done it for a while, but we used to age 18 bottles of wine. I just put 18 bottles away and I would take 12 bottles out from where I was aging. And I used to age all sorts of weird things, everything from English Bacchus, New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, just to see what would happen, because it's really hard to buy a 10-year-old English Bacchus. So some of those wines actually surprisingly improved. Changed in a non-negative way, I would say.
We have a lot of, since we have about 850 different compartments for wine, that means we have roughly 1,500 members or something like that. And many of them have their own little experiments. Apart from the really nice wines that they are aging, they also tend to try to age strange stuff. So there is a lot of interesting little experiments down in those cellars.
All right then, Nicholas, I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Chris.